Happy Monday morning, SideQuest podcast listeners. I have a great guest for you today, but before I get to an intro for her, just want to do a quick reminder. If you're not following me on Facebook, head over to facebook.com/sidequestfitness. Like the page there, get all the updates on articles, podcast episodes, as well as much, much more. You can also follow me on Instagram as well at SideQuestFM or over at Twitter at SideQuestFM. Here is a great thing I'm also giving out. If you head over to SideQuestFitness.com and join the Brotherhood. The Brotherhood is my email list, and you get access to a super secret, cool Facebook group where we can all join together in a brotherhood to celebrate our achievements, to give encouragement, and work in our ways towards living a healthy and happy life. When you head over there, you'll get two free gifts, an ebook that will teach you how to unlock the hero inside of you, as well as The Quest of the Traveling Bard, which is just a little challenge for you to embark on the next time you are heading out to travel. And this is the week of Thanksgiving, so a lot of you will be traveling here if you're in the United States. If not, you have another holiday coming up in December. We have Christmas and Hanukkah, and we have a lot of New Year stuff, so people will be traveling. So use that while you're on the road to stay fit and stay healthy and keep your diet on track before the new year. So head over to sidequestfitness.com, put your name and email in there, and join the Brotherhood. And when you do that, you'll be the first to get podcast access on Sunday. So one day before it is published on iTunes, you will get access to Monday's episode. And that's what you get when you join the Brotherhood. I have a great guest for you today. She is the one and only Jill Coleman over at jillfit.com. She was a fantastic guest. I only had a brief 45 minutes with her, but we chatted about a lot of things. About jumping in before you learn to fly, the importance of the gray, and why it's so hard to sell, you know, the gray when everyone's selling sexy and flashy things. Consistency always trumps perfection. The fear that many people have of being an imposter, whether that's in the fitness industry or whatever industry you are in, how she fell into the world of fitness, and why every man and woman deserves to have their own experience. So if that experience is getting shredded to be on stage, you know, why she pushes for her clients to go through that and actually experience that and learn from that experience. And I really like that. So before we get into the show, just want to say thank you guys again for making 2015 a great year of listening. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, head to iTunes, hit subscribe, go to Stitcher, hit subscribe, or join the Brotherhood, leave your email, and you'll get access Sunday before the episode is published on Monday. So that's what I want to do for you guys. But again, thank you so much for making this an excellent, excellent year for the podcast. And please share episodes, give it to your friends, let everyone know the awesome stuff that's going on here. But I don't want to talk and ramble any further. Let's get into the show and listen to the one and the only Jill Coleman. Welcome to the show. As I mentioned in the intro, I have a fantastic guest for you today. I've only got limited time with her, so I want to make sure we get to all the questions and you guys can learn a lot from her. But she is one of the premier women in the fitness industry, someone I love to read, and someone I love to send articles to for my clients when they're struggling. Because as I have to admit, as a man, sometimes I don't get it. And my wife even tells me that. And I will be completely honest with you, sometimes I don't. So when there's other women out there, you know, like my guest today or the others that I've had on the show, I send their articles out because, you know, I'm not going to try and understand because I don't. But anyways, I have a great guest, the one and the only Jill Coleman. Jill, welcome to the show.
Hey, Remy. Thanks so much for having me. Super excited to get into this stuff today.
Cool. So for people who may not know who you are, that might be listening and might not know who Jill Coleman is, could you give us just a little background of sort of how you got into the world of fitness and how you arrived to where you are?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for asking. Yeah, obviously, like I'm not one of those people who kind of like found fitness later in life. I was lucky enough to fall in love with exercise as a teenager and have been working in gyms since I was 15 years old. And so kind of just like fell in love with exercise, team sports, things like that. Ended up, you know, rowing crew in college, teaching fitness classes, becoming a personal trainer. Later on, going back and get my master's in nutrition to kind of put the whole piece together with the exercise and nutrition piece. And I started, as many do who are interested in fitness, kind of taking it to more of an extreme approach. So I started doing figure competitions, fitness modeling, getting into that whole bodybuilding scene. And, you know, it got a little hectic. It got a little crazy and extreme. And so the past 5 or 6 years or so, it was a great experience. I loved it. Loved seeing your physique that way. Loved kind of the whole process, that journey. But the last 5 or 6 years, been kind of coming back to balance personally with eating, exercise, and also I do a lot of online coaching now. So my business is at jillfit.com. It used to be Jill Fit Physiques, but have kind of moved away from the physique angle so much lately, and now more it's mindset. And I actually do a good amount of business coaching for women who are health and fitness professionals or enthusiasts in the gym and want to learn how to bring their business online, start a blog, social media, build a platform online. So I do mostly business coaching now, mindset work, but everything is just at jillfit.com. And it's kind of, I always talk about my own journey because I think it's so important for women to see that, you know, it's an ongoing process. Like every day is a little bit different. Every year is a little bit different. And honoring that and really kind of coming over to the self-love side, the self-worth side, the self-compassion side, and still being able to reach your goals with fitness and nutrition.
Was there a, do you sort of, you know, because you did the physique stuff, and I've spoken and met some girls who do bikini, and I know a few guys who've done bodybuilding as well. And men don't, you know, typically admit it, but sometimes we too are a little harder on ourselves when it comes, you know, to our own bodies and seeing ourselves in the mirror. Do you remember the moment that you kind of went, all right, you know what, this is all getting a little ridiculous. And can you sort of describe like what that process was and how you sort of unlocked that, and now how you sort of work with mindset to help other women get past, you know, the oh my God, I have to get skinnier and skinnier and skinnier?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I think one of, and I came to this a little bit later, but one of the things that I really believe strongly is that every woman or man deserves to have their own experience. So I have a lot of girls, because I talked very openly about the whole process. And at the time, you know, I loved it. It's a great, seeing yourself in that kind of shape and, you know, seeing your body look the best it's ever looked and getting up on stage in front of your friends and family is the most rewarding thing, and knowing how much you had to sacrifice to reach that point. It is extreme. But I've talked a lot about the process and how, for me, mentally, it was really kind of the rebound, the weight regain and all of that really did a number on me mentally. And so I have a lot of women who reach out to me and have the same experience. So I'm very open about that process. But then I have a lot of people who, women who email me and say, I really want to do a show, but, you know, I don't want to happen to me what happened to you, and I'm scared. And I always tell them that I think that they owe it to themselves to have the full experience. Otherwise, they're always going to wonder, yeah, and they're not going to get the full education or the full journey that I think we all owe it to ourselves. So I can sit here, you and I can sit here and tell our clients or tell, you know, people on the internet that, you know, warn them against this and they should do this and recommend things and give advice. But until someone has their own journey with it, I just don't think that it's that impactful. So I always tell people just have the full experience, but then just stay mindful, right? So you and I and everyone who's in this industry is kind of there to just say, to just point out, oh, have you looked at this? Or maybe you want to consider this, or maybe this is share their own experience. And that is useful when someone, I think more importantly, I've gotten to the point where I don't really think giving advice and giving like tools and how to's are as important as connecting with somebody. Yeah. So for example, you know, I think we should all share in our struggles and also share in our successes. So for me, I really always encourage women to really have a struggle, like go through that struggle. Cause when you come to the other side, you have the lessons, and there's nothing that you or I could tell someone. They have to experience it themselves.
Yeah, that's very true. I was, you know, sort of, I was listening to Tim Ferriss, you know, talk to a former Navy SEAL. And he was saying, you know, how when he pulled someone out and had them overlooking the battlefield, that person was like, oh, like, now I get it. Now I get what you see, you know, and, yep, and like, it's not, we're not in that, you know, I'm not there, but now I know, you know, what it's like to be you. And I think that's very hard for a lot of people, because you have those goals and you can tell people, this is going to be really, really hard. And then once you kind of get through that experience, you're like, okay, now I get what they were saying. And I think that's an important thing to sort of preach that have your experience, do it, but know that, you know, it could be sort of life changing when you come out at the end. You might be like, you know what? I don't really want to do that.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And you don't know that until you've kind of gone through it. And I think for me, when I had a lot of, when I first got started in the industry, a lot of people aren't talking, at least to me, they weren't talking about weight regain and rebounding after a show. Or if you diet for, I mean, it doesn't even have to be for a competitor. It can be for a woman who just maybe goes on Weight Watchers for like 6 months. And then at the end of 6 months has lost 30 pounds and then kind of slowly gains it back over the next 6 months and maybe even more weight, you know? So it's very common, but like yo-yo dieting is common, very common. And the mental toll, I think that takes, no one really talking about that. And I felt very almost betrayed by my own coach that he didn't tell me, you know? And so, and of course, like now it's fine. I kind of own that process, but I think that's why I'm so passionate about having the discussion. So whether or not someone was going to take my advice, at least I want to know that the discussion is being had and that people are staying aware so that when it does happen, they go, oh, here it is. This is the thing that Jill was talking about. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's just like, let's just share all of our own experiences, struggles, tools, but then, you know, encourage people to have the full experience and go through the pain. Like, I think there's value in the struggle.
Yeah, there is. And that brought an interesting question to mind when you mentioned, you know, the struggle and going through it. Cause I started to write this piece and then I hated all the words and I deleted it. And then I started writing again and then I hated all the words and I deleted it. And I don't like publicly, I don't want to put out, you know, like pictures of me with like without a shirt on. Only because I don't want other guys to be like, oh, well, look, there it is. There's another guy who, you know, he says he loves video games and he's a giant nerd, but, you know, he's shirtless. He's just another ripped white dude. Like, I don't want to be another ripped white dude. And I don't want anyone to think that that's what you have to be. And that's something that I struggle with. Is there something that, like, you sort of struggle with that maybe you haven't found the courage or slowly are finding the courage to kind of talk about?
Yeah. Oh, I love that question because I think we all have something like that. You know, for me, it's been a journey. So here's an example. And I think anyone who's listening to this call who is in the fitness industry as a professional, personal trainer, blogger, you know, group fitness instructor, health coach, we all, I think, struggle with the imposter syndrome, right? Like fraud syndrome. Yeah. We feel as if we are going to get found out at some point. Maybe we don't have the right credentials. We don't have enough expertise. We don't have enough clinical experience in the gym. And we don't really necessarily have the ripped physique. So I know, like, it sounds like you do, but I think for, like, many personal trainers, this is something I struggled with for a long time. I'll give you an example. It was about 3 or 4 years ago, and I was slated to speak at an event for fitness models. So I was talking about business at a fitness modeling conference. So everyone there was going to be shooting. They were all like dieted down. They had, you know, they were getting ready to shoot with all these photographers. And then there was like an academic side of the conference where they came in and I talked to them about online membership sites and marketing and branding and stuff like that. So I wasn't speaking on how to get ripped. I was speaking on business. But my audience was going to be all fitness models. Yeah. And I started getting really nervous. I'm like, oh my God, am I going to have to diet for this? Right? Like, I'm almost like, what if I'm not in good enough shape to tell these people what to do? And I was like, this is absurd. And so I finally caught myself and I was like, that's absurd. My value as an educator or the information I'm going to share has like my body fat percentage or how lean or ripped I am has no bearing on how effective I am as a teacher, as a coach or whatever. So, you know, for me, it was just that process of owning that. But I remember so vividly thinking like, are they going to be judging me? I'm not in good shape. And I was like, I'm there to teach business. So the thing for me that really was the lesson is that I've seen women who are in such great shape, super lean, 10% body fat, who are not confident, completely insecure, not owning their power, like, you know, not effective in the world. Then I've seen women who are, you know, 20, 30, 40% body fat who are just crushing it because they're confident regardless. They're confident because they just decided to be. And so that to me was a huge lesson that I've learned over the last 2 years. So my ability to contribute or my ability to be a good coach or teacher has nothing to do with what pant size I'm wearing. And that was something that over time I kind of had to adapt because you're coming from a physique background. You feel like that's the only thing you have to offer. If you're not super lean or super ripped, why is anyone going to pay attention to you? And that's a dangerous trap that a lot of women fall into, including myself.
It is. It is. So, and while you were saying that, I was thinking back, as I was doing some research and reading over stuff, I remember the post that you put up about, you know, you were at the women's fitness conference that you had done this year. I believe, was it in Venice Beach? It was in California,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned that you were getting dressed and Jen Sinclair, you know, former guest on the show, fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, was like, oh my gosh, you look amazing. And you were like, but, and you had those thoughts of like, yeah, but,
oh,
but
yeah.
You know, it's so interesting that, you know, people sort of think that, oh man, you're so attractive. You have it all together. No, like some of us still, you know, have those questions and those thoughts.
It's really interesting to me. One thing, and I've actually posted on this before, because you have women who, you know, maybe are a little overweight, judging women who are underweight for having insecurities, right? So yeah. If someone is like you, I mean, it's all relative, isn't it? So I'm a normal size. Some days I feel like I want to be insecure. Like some days I'm insecure. Someone who might be bigger than me or not as muscular or whatever might be like, well, Jill, you have no reason to be insecure. Look at you. Right. And so I've written a post about how each woman deserves their own. They have a right to their own journey. Right. So yeah. It's not for someone else to say, oh, you should just be confident. What's wrong with you? And you're just like, well, that's fine. And then you have women who are, you know, who are not, quote, like in shape or ripped or whatever. And they just like they feel awesome. And again, they should not be judged. Oh, they should be a little bit less confident. Look at them. Right. Everyone deserves their own journey. Everyone has the right to their own process. And so I don't know that we can ever say this person shouldn't be or this person should be. It's all completely relative. It has nothing to do with objective measurements of, you know, dress size or body fat percent or weight or anything like that.
Yeah, that's I think it's very hard for a lot of us to sort of realize that everyone at some point is on a different path, like somewhere on that path. Yep. You know, and as I said, sort of, you know, as we were talking before we got on, you know, I'm a giant nerd, and I sort of view fitness as like I'm on a quest, and you know, I'm my ultimate quest is to live a long, happy, healthy life, and I might have side quests of adding a little muscle or getting stronger or you know, whatever. Yep. It is, but you know, my journey is different than someone else's, and I think it's very hard for a lot of us to sort of come to terms with that, because we see people we aspire to be, and this can be in business. This is more than just physical. Like this is business. This is personal. This is relationship. I mean, I remember being a teenager and being like, why don't any girls want to go out with me? Nobody wants to go on a date with me. You know, but you know, I had to go on my own journey of discovering, you know, my own self, and what someone else wasn't going to give that to me. You know, I sort of had to go through the weeds and figure out who I was,
I think we all get to that point where we sometimes we do achieve the thing we think is going to bring happiness, right? Like we go, oh, if I just had this amount of money, then I would be, if I was just making this much. Oh, if I had just this relationship. Oh, if I just got this lean. You know, we have these things and we get there and we wonder why it's still not enough. We wonder why we're still dissatisfied, right? And so I think that's such a huge trap to get into. So a lot of what we talk about at Jill Fit is the ability to feel gratitude or to feel appreciative for where you are at this point and just go, you know what? Yeah, I still want to be a little more successful. I still want to make a little bit more money. I still want to reach a few more people. I still want to get a little bit lean, but would I be okay if I never lost another pound? And if you can say that, then you just know that on some level, you feel that very deep level of self-worth, regardless of the achievement of I need to have this, then I'll feel good. Because we know plenty of people who seemingly have it all and are miserable. Mm-hmm. So it really is such a personal journey. It's so relative to your point. And it really does come from that inside level of how do I find a way to feel worthy and to feel special or unique or important or contributing, regardless of kind of my body fat percent or how much money I'm making or what relationship I have. Can I feel those things about that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. So sort of diverting a little from that, just a little bit, you know, reading about you, you know, I loved your bio, you know, as a North Carolina boy, it was good to be like, okay, she lived in North Carolina for a little while. So I just want to ask, what is one thing you miss about either North Carolina since you went to Wake Forest or the East Coast since you're now on the West Coast?
Yeah, that's such a good question. Well, first of all, I grew up in Boston. So I grew up in the Northeast, New England, and it was just, there's no, I knew when I went to Wake, there was no way I was going back up north. It's just way too cold for me.
Good, because my wife constantly wants to go back to New England.
I mean, it's gorgeous. It really is. There's so much, I mean, there's so much more culture, and you know, the food is amazing and stuff. But like the South is, and the South is really interesting. When I moved from Boston, it was a huge change. People call you like honey and sweetie and baby, and like, meanwhile, I'm going, people in Boston don't even smile at each other. You know what I mean? So like walking down the street. So it is a funny switch. And I think they all have their merits. So one of the things I miss and love the most about North Carolina for sure is the fall and the spring. Like, so the changing of the seasons, the fall, especially right now, so beautiful down there, like just driving down, side roads or driving even on the highway, like with the leaves changing and stuff. That's probably the weather, I would say, for sure. But then also the people. The people are very, just very open, very kind, very generous. And so, you know, those are probably two things. But yeah, I mean, Wake Forest campus too is beautiful. And I worked at Wake for a number of years. So I really appreciate being able to see the campus change and all that.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous campus. It's very interesting that the student population was smaller than my high school.
Is it? That's so funny.
Yeah, always blew me away. But I'm reading about your early life in Boston, and that you took a job watching kids at the daycare center, mm-hmm. For the gym. funny enough, one of my first jobs was working at a daycare as well. But I basically was hired to be the enforcer because you have a really deep voice. You scare the kids. Thanks. I'm glad that's what you guys hired me for. But you mentioned, that you just jump in and you learn things on the fly. So besides fitness, what else have you jumped in and learned on the fly in life?
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much for asking that. I've never been asked that before. That's such a fun question because for me, that's definitely that's a huge piece of my value system is jumping before you're ready.
Yeah.
And I think that comes down to a level of self-trust. You have to get this point, we'll call it confidence or call it whatever, that you just go, you know what? I actually don't know if this is going to work, but I'm going to jump in and figure it out. A couple of things, but I guess the first one would definitely be my business, right? So when I quit my full-time job and I was building my blog following, I was working full-time and also building my blog for a couple of years. And I was after 2 years, I ended up quitting my full-time job and going fully online. But one thing happened, got stagnant in my business. I didn't really know what to do. I was doing these 12-week fat loss meal plans at a distance and stuff like that. It was great. My business was, it was a great problem to have, but I was at the max number of people I could take on, and write these meal plans and do email and stuff like that. And so I wanted to hire a mentor. And I said, looked around the industry and I was like, who's really doing a great job? And I'm sure you know the Cosgroves, Rachel and Alan Cosgrove. Mm-hmm. And Rachel at the time had a couple of books out and she had a column in Women's Health and, she had a successful business working with her husband. And I was like, you know what? She's really got it together. So I reached out to her and she, I said, hey, Rachel, I don't know if you do coaching calls, but I'd love to get a call with you. And she said, sure. It's $375 for 30 minutes. And I was like, what? And I'm like, I'm just like a personal trainer. And I'm thinking, $375, this woman crazy, right? But I also remember being intrigued by that because I was like, you know what? If there's something she can charge that much, I need to figure out what she knows.
Yeah.
And so I paid the thing, had the coaching call. It was great. And at the end of the coaching call, she ended up upselling me into their year-long coaching program, so the year-long mentorship. And she was like, I'd love for you to be in our mentorship if you feel like you really want to get your business to the next level, it's not. And I said, I'm thinking, oh, that sounds so good. And she's like, okay, great. And it's $10,000. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm just like, this girl's, like, I couldn't even fathom spending that much money on anything. I just thought, I'm like a do-it-yourselfer,
Yeah.
At that time. And so I remember being like, there's no way I can afford that. And so I put it on the back burner. I was getting ready to tell her that it wasn't. And I remember vividly, I was going for a walk with my husband and he said, Jill, you need to do that. We have to figure out a way for you to do that. That's like the next step for you. Let's figure it out. And, with his help and kind of everything we had learned, I said, well, let me just launch a business mentorship. Let me launch my own program to make enough money to pay for this thing over here. And I had been doing my business for over 2 years, and I had never been really consider myself a business coach, but I said, you know what? I can teach people just what I know. There are people who are just getting started. I can teach them what I've learned in the last 2 years So let me just do that. And I launched the program and made enough money to buy the mentorship myself, which is really good. But ever since then, so for me, that was a huge risk in terms of, like, I don't feel like I know everything. But do I know enough to teach someone something? And I was like, yes, I do. All you need to be is one step ahead of the person you're teaching. So I was like, I don't know everything, but I know a little bit. And I can teach these 12 people this little bit that I know. And that was an example of me just, like, literally winging it. I launched it, made the money, paid for the mentorship, started my own program, like, a couple weeks later. And I was like, all right, here we are. And I created the content as I went along. It was a year-long program. You know, and so looking back, I've learned so much since then, obviously. And the program has been expanded, and it started with 14 girls, and now it's 85 girls. So every year it's gotten bigger and bigger. But I'm so grateful for the opportunity, because if I didn't have that self-trust and that confidence, I never would have launched the program the first time. And now it's my favorite. Now it's, like, what I do full time. So that's an example. And I would say, anyone listening, if you have an idea for something, you don't have to know all the steps. You just need to know the first step. Because as soon as you do the first step, the second step will show itself.
Yeah.
And so the more you do that, the more practice you get at jumping without quite knowing, the better you get. So it's hard, but at the same time, this can be applied to, like you said, this can be applied to relationship stuff. It can be applied to making a move, leaving a job, starting your own business, you know, signing up for a competition, signing up for a race or an event. I mean, you don't have to know all the steps. You just have to know the first one.
Yeah. Which many times is just taking that one, doing that one thing, signing a name, or, you know,
yep.
I mean, this entire show was started like that. I had the idea and I was like, man, I don't really know. And then just, like, two signs out of nowhere were sort of like made me go, okay, you just need to do it. I just did it. And then just started emailing people. And next thing I know, I'm talking to some of the best in the business.
That's very cool. I love that story, but that's how it starts. Like, I don't think anyone ever knows exactly what it's going to look like. And you have to get comfortable with discomfort. So one of my favorite things to say is the better you get at discomfort, the better you get.
Yeah.
To me, it's always the people who are okay with a little bit of uncertainty that make the biggest strides, because in a sense, if you think about, we talk about self-trust, the opposite of trust is control. So when I need to know what every single step looks like between here and the next 5 years, I'm trying to control everything and those things are uncontrollable. So when you start your podcast, you probably weren't like, oh, and then this year, by this time next year, I'll have these things in place. And you're probably just like, you know what, I'm going to just jump and I'll figure it out on the fly. I'll know what next week looks like next week.
Yep,
right. And you kind of have to go with that and have that kind of trust.
Yeah. And that's, you know, having a plan is great, but sometimes you just like, you will over plan and you will plan yourself into never doing anything.
Exactly. Totally. Completely agree.
Okay. So a couple of fun questions. And then we'll come back to some more of the in-depth stuff. So I'm reading about you online, and I find out that you really got your start in fitness and exercise by dancing around to some Janet Jackson. And I gotta say, I do love me some Janet Jackson. So what's your favorite Janet Jackson song?
Oh my God! I mean, it's so funny. My favorite Janet Jackson on Rhythm Nation. Like, you just have to go all the way back. Rhythm Nation. Like, that's my childhood. Those are my childhood songs. You know, I mean, I grew up with Janet.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I forgot. I just launched my new website last July, and you know, my designer I was working with was like, you know, one thing that's really cool. A lot of people are doing these, like, you know, fun facts on their about pages, and I was like, oh, it's kind of tacky. Like, it sounds like I'm bragging. You know, when I've been starting it, and so many people are like, oh my God, I love, like, learning these, like, fun, weird things about you. Or, like, you know, so it was a little bit out of my comfort zone. But yeah, so Janet Jackson and I, we go way back. Yeah, for sure. What's your favorite song?
You know, here's the thing. So I love all of her stuff, but I'm also a huge Michael Jackson fan. And for about a year, every Friday, I would listen to Michael Jackson on Friday, because what better way was there to start the weekend? Like, Michael Jackson Fridays. Like, you're pumped. You're ready to go. Work is done. You know, I'm dancing around the tiny little, like, office I was in New York City. And, you know, it was a good way to get the weekend pumped. I love Scream.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
Mostly because it was one of the first music videos I saw. Like, I got to sneak away and watch on MTV. And I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. But yeah,
I think when Thriller came out, I was like four or something. And I remember, I had this little tiny trampoline, you know, those mini trampolines that people have, like, in the 80s.
Yeah.
I had one of those, and I had a jump rope, And I literally, for hours, would jump on a trampoline and jump rope to the Thriller record. I'm dating myself, but the record. And that's so funny. I was like laughing. My mom and I'm like, I think that's how I got these quads. Like, I think I just, like, built those quads, like, when I was 5 years old, like, jumping on the trampoline to, God, I wish I had that kind of endurance now. But it's so funny, right? I mean, you just love it. The music is so, like, it's just, like, you get to dance to it, like PYT and all that stuff.
Oh, man. Oh, PYT. PYT. The way you make me feel, like, that's the one. Like, It was really hard to cut that from our wedding list. Like, we spent like 3 months like preparing the most epic like music for our wedding with my wife and I. And I was like, but we can't cut it. She's like, well, we kind of have to. And I was like, all right, fine. But yeah.
And then you're like, well, we can't have a whole playlist. Our whole wedding playlist can't be Michael Jackson. So.
Yeah, I know. I lost out on a lot of good ones. But, you know, what can you do? All right. Yeah. If you could go anywhere in a time machine, where would you go?
God, you know, I would probably go back to like the Renaissance time, like 1700s, because I've been in Europe a lot lately, like over this past year, and just like being in Rome for the first time and like it just and being around a lot of art in Italy. That's probably when I would. I mean, obviously, there's so many different time periods to go back to, but to me, I've just been drawn to that time period recently, like the art and the culture and just like the almost the rebellious nature of it. I love it.
Because I noticed on Instagram, you mentioned that you were in Europe and you were in Barcelona.
Yeah.
What has been your favorite European city you've gone to so far that, like, you didn't expect it to be really awesome, but it sort of, like, blew you away?
Yeah, you know, my favorite European city is definitely Paris. I spent 3 weeks there last spring and kind of, like, lived there in an Airbnb, and it was amazing. And then, like, a close second is Nice, which is in the south of France. And, of course, everyone's like, oh, the south of France, like, it's supposed to be beautiful and stuff. So it really didn't surprise me. But I loved it, and especially because I've been to a lot of European. And then Rome, for me, is very – those are probably my three top: Paris, Nice, and Rome.
Cool.
So gorgeous.
So last final fun one, and then we'll go back to some more on fitness. If you could be any animal on a carousel, what animal would you be and why?
Oh, I have to be a horse because – So actually, like, my husband has this game called the Clan Game. So it's basically like, what animal do you resemble? And mine is definitely a horse. So like, we always say like, oh, I'm horse clan. So like, a lot of times on Instagram, if I'm posting like, I don't know, like a picture, like a running picture, an exercise picture, I'll use the horse emoji because it's like my clan. So I definitely need to be a horse if I'm going to be on a carousel.
Okay. All right. I like it. So I noticed, you know, on your site, you have a lot of ambassadors that, you know, that help, and that seems like a big push you've sort of done with your online business. What is one important lesson you've learned from your ambassadors, you know, since you sort of established and started that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. The reason why I wanted to start the ambassadorship is because I felt as if, I had a lot of girls who were in my Best of You program, which is a business mentorship I was telling you about. And I had girls who had been with me for a year or two, and I wanted to help bridge the gap between what they had done in a year and where I kind of was 3 or 4 years in. So I wanted to establish the ambassadorship to encourage them to put a little more skin in the game. So, for example, part of the ambassadorship requires them have create a product, an online product, and get it affiliate approved. And then we actually do an affiliate launch together. So I take them and kind of mentor them through the creation of their product, like whether it's a exercise program or nutrition guide or, you know, some sort of mindset education. And then they get it approved for affiliation. So other professionals like you and I could potentially push it. And so part of that is like kind of leveling up your online game. So like kind of putting them on the hook. Like, one of my favorite things is to put myself on the hook. So if I want to do something, I say what I'm going to do before I know exactly what it's going to look like. I put it on the calendar. I publicly announce it. And I'm like, this is what's happening. So part of what the ambassadorship is about is getting these girls to get out of their comfort zone and really kind of put themselves on the hook for something that just, like, elevate their game. You know, because I think you and I both know that if we just go, oh, yeah, I'll do that at some point. Like, a lot of times, like you said, it doesn't really get done. Or we deliberate so long, or we talk ourselves out of it, or we second-guess everything to the point that it doesn't get done. So the ambassadorship is kind of like, it's a nudge, and it's also helping them elevate, because otherwise, what is my mentorship really about if it's all about, like, let me just show you the way, and then I kind of leave them. So for me, the ambassadorship is between the two. So we have the mentorship, which is like year one, and then the ambassadorship, which is year two and beyond of that program. So it's by application only, and I try and keep it really small because I really want people to come to the Jill Fit site and check out all the different girls, and they, you know, have all different niches. Some are more mom, speak to more moms. Some are more speak to college age students. Like, so it's all over the board, and it's a nice way for me to give Jill Fit readers a different perspective or serve them in a different way.
Okay, cool. It's an excellent way to sort of get people in the business who are, sort of new and don't know sort of what to do. I'm a part of something myself right now, and I'm super excited for it because I know I'm going to be learning a lot. I'm sort of like you. I just jumped into the podcast and jumped into, you know, fitness coaching online. And, I still don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying to figure out as I go. But it's good to have a group of people, behind you and supporting you, along the way.
Yeah, for sure. It is. It's a nice, we everyone's a little bit different, has a different niche, but we all come together because we're all really like-minded. So like the energy is really awesome in a group. Like everyone is, and online business is very specific in terms of people only read your stuff if they resonate with it. If they don't, they leave. So there's almost a perfect matching system. So every time I launch Best of You, which is my mentorship, every time I launch it, I'm like, I have the best people. Like we're all the same, but that's not by accident. It's just like, that's the climate because that's who shows up to read Jill Fit, who's interested in the programs and stuff. And I do, I literally feel so grateful every day. I have the best people. And so, but it's not by accident. It's like, that's how we curate and we cultivate that, that community together. Cause we're all like shared experiences, shared value system, shared mindset. And it's a very cool process and organic too.
Yeah. Cool. So we've kind of talked about it as we first got in, and it's very interesting how I write questions down sometimes, and I'm like, I don't know, but this feels weird. Maybe it's not really there, and then we end up sort of segueing into it or talking about it before I even get to it. You mentioned, as you sort of came out of that struggle of being perfect and mm-hmm. having to get skinnier or whatever, and you just realized, I'm happy with me. I'm just going to be me. That it was, the answer was in the gray. So why is the gray so hard to sell to others as opposed to like the sexy and flashy?
I love that question. It's hard. I mean, I think that's just as consumers, especially in our industry, right? In the fitness industry, fitness space, there's a lot of urgency. There's a lot of urgency, and unfortunately, marketers, and I consider myself a marketer too, but marketers tend to play to people's sense of urgency and scarcity. So, for example, we kind of trained people buying fitness programs that they should expect fast results. We have trained people who are buying, meal plans that they're going to lose 10 pounds this week. Like, we kind of train them for the instant gratification mindset.
Yeah.
So, in a sense, and I think that's like permeates all a lot of our culture anyway in different areas, but especially in the fitness space, they want the magic pill, they want the shortcut, they don't want to actually go through the hard stuff. And the gray is hard. The moderate approach is very hard. It takes a lot of practice. It's easier to go to extremes. It's much easier to say, well, let me just go all in. And then if you have one single mess up, you throw your hands up and you're like, well, why even bother? And you go way on the other side. And I know from personal experience and also from working with hundreds of women that a lot of us do this all the time. We ping pong back and forth from the super depriving to the overindulgence, the depriving to the overindulgent. And most people just ping pong back and forth. They don't see the little steps in between. And the reason why they don't see them is, to me anyway, is because it's a lot harder. It takes nuance. It takes some introspection work. It takes some awareness, some mindfulness. That's a practice. And you have to be brave enough to practice that. And you also have to actually believe it might work for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really hard is I hear a lot of women saying, look, I love the way you approach moderation and it sounds so good, but I just, they don't trust themselves to be able to do it. They're like, I want to, but I feel safe doing the black and white thing. I feel safe doing the all or nothing thing. And so a lot of it comes down to courage. And for me and for, I think, the women I worked with, you have to reach a point of like kind of misery. You have to kind of reach a point of misery with the whole thing, the process. You need to have the experience, the yo-yo dieting experience. I did that for 5 years before I finally got sick of it, threw my hands up, and I was like, you know what? I got to figure this out. So I think everyone has to get to their own personal level of misery before they go, you know what, I have nothing else to lose. I already feel awful. So I'm going to try this new way, even though it's super scary, with the moderate approach, even though it's harder, even though it takes longer, even though I have to be patient, and I'm going to try and figure it out. And as Jill said, we've gotten hundreds of women who are willing to take that risk and have seen on the other side how much more freeing it can be to live in the gray. Because nothing is ever urgent. Nothing is ever scarce. Nothing is ever exclusive. Nothing is ever going away. Nothing is ever illicit. It's just like right in that middle all the time. And it becomes very liberating too. So, I mean, obviously, I mean, extremes are easier. Moderation is a lot tougher. So it's a lot harder sell. And it takes patience. It took me about, you know, 2 or 3 years to figure it all out.
Yeah. Yeah. Moderation is not, it's not, hard, it's not easy to sell that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. We're very,
and people also don't really know. They also don't know really what it means, right?
Like, right.
People can moderate. They like, rules. Like, people want rules and systems and frameworks, and we say, oh, just eat a little bit of everything. People are like, how much is that? You know what I mean? So, you know, it's really hard to sell because, again, it comes down to trusting themselves and someone not giving them an off-the-shelf plan, which is what we feel comfortable with. We want someone else to take the reins, and that just doesn't, you can't do that with moderation.
Yeah, yeah. I know we're getting short on time, but I got just a couple more questions.
Sure.
I'm assuming this was sort of your first post for 2015, and we're almost at the end, so I wanted to ask you, how has 2015 been with your goal of being anti-perfectionist? Have you succeeded?
Mm-hmm. I have succeeded. To me, it's been awesome. So, like, I wrote 2 posts right at the beginning of the year. One was the year of anti-perfectionism, and then ways to be an anti-perfectionist in 2015. Because what I was seeing was a lot of women, you and I talked about this already, a lot of women who wouldn't do anything, like they wouldn't take a chance, they wouldn't take a risk, they wouldn't put themselves out there if they weren't sure that it was going to be perfect. So in the online space and the business space, I have a lot of women I work with who are scared to write a blog if they, you know, because they're scared that it's not going to be the most mind-blowing thing they've ever written. And I'm like, you know what? Consistency will trump perfection every time.
Yep.
Just be consistent. And the more consistent you are, the closer to perfection you will approach, right? So, like, for me, the mantra is always just, like, do it first, figure it out later. Do it first, figure it out later. And you can't do it without giving up your perfectionism just a little bit.
Yeah.
I loved it. It's been a great year.
I love that you said consistency trumps perfection. You know, it didn't dawn on me until this year, sort of what my dad and what all my coaches really meant when they said practice makes perfect, that there's really no perfect, but consistently practicing, which is what practice is. Like, if you just look at it as practice, mm-hmm. like each day, you will get better. For some reason that sort of dawned on me this year. All right. So final question, and then I'll let you tell folks where they can find out more about you. I stole this one from Tim Ferriss, but I love it because it's such a great question. If you could have dinner with anyone in history, who would it be and why?
Oh, I mean, I have to go with my homegirl, Eleanor Roosevelt. Like, I mean, woman is just awesome. Like, she inspires me all the time, just in terms of, like, how she was thinking, especially at that time. And she was just, like, out in front with some timeless knowledge.
Yeah.
And being super confident, being super in her power, you know, not being scared to say what her truth was in an age when, you know, women weren't necessarily given that or seen that way. And so, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, she's such an interesting, a very interesting person. My wife was telling me that there are even parts of the White House that she sort of ran, like, that people don't really know about.
Yep.
And a lot of things that she sort of did in the administration that became parts of history, but she's not even written down. She was just behind the scenes. Which is really cool to know. Awesome. Well, Jill, I've had an amazing, amazing time chatting with you. If people want to know more about you, where can they find you? You know, online. I know you mentioned JillFit.com, but where can they find you in social or anywhere else?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And there's a couple questions that I've never been asked before, so I really always appreciate that. Thank you. So JillFit.com is the website, and on just Facebook / JillFit. and on Instagram, Jill Fit, and Twitter, Jill Fit. So it's super easy. Everything is just Jill Fit. And if, I know we talked about Best of You, and I have a program that's getting ready to launch. It's called Best of You, which is a mentorship, and that launches in a couple weeks. So if people are interested in hearing more about that and getting in my free education that I'm doing, a business education right now, they can go to my Facebook page. So it's facebook.com/JillFit, and there's a free opt-in there so they can get all the information and all the details if they are someone, fitness professional, fitness enthusiast who wants to learn how to start a blog, build their social media following, create products and programs online, and do all that stuff. So,
awesome. Well, and I will link all of that in the show notes as well. So if you guys head over to the website over at sidequestfitness.com/podcast, you can find all of that information there under Jill's interview section. So I'll make sure to get all that linked up there for you as well. But Jill, thank you. It's been awesome to get you on the podcast. It's been fantastic chatting with you, and good luck with everything that's going on. And I hope that, you know, I've seen that it's been a little hot in California. Hopefully you get a little more autumn weather coming in.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's my first year here, so I'm actually enjoying it right now, but maybe it's going to be like Groundhog Day in a little bit. This winter, I think it gets down to like 50 degrees at night, so I guess we'll see. I'm enjoying it for now. But thanks so much for having me. It was great to talk about this stuff, and, you know, we'll definitely have to do it again, so I appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you. Just wanted to remind you to head over to sidequestfitness.com for all of the show notes and links to Jill's website and much, much more. And while you're there, join the Brotherhood so you can get access to the podcast before anyone else.